The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. Where do you find the U.S. and British peoples mentioned in Bible prophecy? One-third of your Bible, after all, is prophecy, and 90% of it is for today. It's for our time. So would the Bible simply ignore the greatest superpower this world has ever seen? And is the greatest, most dominant empire in the history of this world somehow missing from the pages of your Bible? A lot of people seem to believe that, even in the Christian world. They don't think the United States and Britain are referred to or mentioned anywhere in the Bible. And this is why so many great prophecies of God have not been understood. I mean, we're talking about earth-shaking prophecies. Isn't it about time that the American and British people opened their eyes to the staggering turn in world events that we will see in the next few years? Jesus said in Matthew 24, verses 21 through 22, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." You talk about earth-shaking prophecies. Whether you want it to or not, this prophecy that Jesus Christ himself uttered, it's going to have a profound impact on your life, on your family, on your nation. And so here is this great prophecy of Jesus Christ, one that affects every nation on earth. And we're to assume that the United States and Britain are nowhere mentioned in Bible prophecy?
If the Bible prophecies are telling of the nations and the events of the world and of the world wars, which they do of this time, and these world wars are definitely prophesied in the Bible, and if all of those things are in the Bible, and if nations like Turkey and Russia and Ethiopia, Libya, Egypt, and Greece are mentioned in the Bible prophecies, do you think it reasonable, my friends, that God Almighty can foretell the events of this world at this time and leave out the United States and the great British Commonwealth of Nations, the greatest nations that have ever existed in the history of the world, that have ever inhabited the face of this earth?
Would that even make sense? Would it make sense for the Bible to leave the United States and Great Britain out of end time prophecy? That excerpt I played for you, that's from Herbert Armstrong's old radio programs back in the 1950s and 60s. It wouldn't make sense for us to be excluded from these end time prophecies. As Mr. Armstrong mentioned there, these other nations that are obviously mentioned in prophecy by name, you can look at Daniel 11, just to take one chapter, and see nations like Libya and Egypt and Ethiopia. They're mentioned there, and you know that those nations exist because the names of those nations, they're still used today, even though the boundaries for those nations have changed over the centuries. But then in Daniel 11, you also read about Moab and Edom. And those names aren't commonly used today. And so should we say, well, they don't exist then? Of course those peoples exist. They just go by different names today. That happens all the time. Look at the modern nation of Israel, the little Jewish state in the Middle East. It was established, as you know, in 1948. That's not very old, less than a century old. And yet the ancestry of its people, it goes back thousands of years. The Jews. I mean, you can read about them in the Old Testament. Did you know that before the State of Israel was established in 1948, that Jewish officials actually considered using the name Judah? Maybe if they would have done that, there'd be less confusion today about the identity of Judah and Israel. Most people just falsely assume that all 12 tribes are essentially Jewish, and that, well, they're in Israel. Let's look at Matthew chapter 10 and just go through a few basic scriptures here today. Maybe if it would have been named Judah in 1948, more people would understand that while all Jews are indeed Israelites, that all Israelites are certainly not Jews. There were 12 tribes in Israel. And if you know the history, of course, it split into two nations. We won't take the time to get into that. We'll save that for a later program. And the kingdom of Judah encompassed two and a half tribes. And then there were the northern 10 tribes, the lost tribes, as they became known later in the history. And just an awareness of them being lost was more generally realized a century or two ago. Not today, I guess. This headline from 1885, 130 years ago. This is from the New York Times. Afghans and their home. Are they descendants of Israel's lost tribes? That's what the New York Times wrote about in 1885. They didn't know where they were, and obviously Afghans are not descendants of those lost tribes. But what's interesting is if you go back in that history, you see in the late 1800s, there's a few articles here and there about where are the lost tribes of Israel. And then along with that, there are all kinds of articles in the New York Times that encourage the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine. So they knew that the lost 10 tribes were not Jewish. Matthew 10 here, and verse 5, notice this. It says, "These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans. Enter you not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." That's Matthew 10 and verse 6. Jesus told his disciples, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. What if his disciples would have said, well, I didn't think they existed. I mean, after all, where is that nation's name being used? Where are the boundaries? Jesus said, look, they've been lost. They've been scattered. Now, this was written nearly 800 years after Israel went into captivity. And here Jesus Christ is telling his disciples, you go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. They lost their biblical identity, but they didn't disappear. They just lost their identity. They forgot about who they were. As far as Bible history and Bible prophecy is concerned, and Christ wanted his disciples to take the gospel to those Israelites that had been removed from Samaria and absorbed into the Assyrian Empire hundreds of years before, those that never did return to the promised land. I mean, the Jews did, but we're talking about two separate captivities. Israel going off into Assyrian captivity, and then Judah going off into Babylonian captivity 120 years later, more than a century later. Some of those Jews came back during the restoration, rebuilt the temple, and so on. But the Israelites did not. They were lost. They were lost. They were still in existence. And they still exist today. And knowing their identity is the key that unlocks all of Bible prophecy.
Oh, the United States and the British Commonwealth are not ignored in biblical prophecy. The plain astounding truth is that we are mentioned more often than any other race or any other nation on the face of the earth. And yet our true identity has been hidden from many and only revealed to the very few, and that recently in the comparative modern present. The plain and simple Bible story of our ancestry, of our modern prophetic identity, is the most amazing, the most astounding, and the most fascinating and interesting story that you ever read. Is that important to you, or is it of no consequence whatsoever?
For far too many, it is of no consequence. People don't care. They don't care about their identity, their heritage, their ancestry. They just assume, like so many others, that, well, we're Americans, we're British, we're whoever, and the Bible doesn't really concern us. That, again, was Mr. Armstrong speaking back in the old days of his work, the 1950s or 1960s, on his very popular radio program. You can see why so many people requested his material over the years. He had a powerful message, and that message needs to go out again. In his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, Mr. Armstrong asked, why do not the world's leaders see what is coming? Why are the world's best minds unseeing the heads of state, scientists, educators, editors, news analysts, bankers, industrialists, leaders in business and commerce? They are totally unaware. Why, he asks. Why? Well, he outlines two reasons for this universal ignorance. For one, he says they've been deceived by false education. And then second to that, he said the vital key necessary to unlock closed doors of biblical prophecy had been lost. See, the identity of those lost sheep in Israel, the identity was lost, and people have lost sight of this today. And so they can't understand Bible prophecy, and they don't know what's coming. Let's look at Romans chapter 9, see what the Apostle Paul said about the Israelites. Romans chapter 9 and verse 4. As I said at the start there, I mean, one-third of the Bible is prophecy, and most of it's for the latter days. And listen, the United States and Britain are going to factor into it heavily. They're right at the center of so many of these end-time events. Romans 9 and verse 4, we'll just back up to verse 3. Picking it up here, Paul said, for I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh, who are Israelites, to whom pertains the sonship, as it should read, and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises. These Israelites, I mean, to whom pertains the sonship, God said, and the glory and the covenants, and God gave the law through them. What a history. In the United States and Britain in prophecy, Mr. Armstrong said, its history from Genesis to Revelation, speaking of the Bible, its history from Genesis to Revelation is primarily the history of one nation or people, the Israelites. Other nations are mentioned only insofar as they come into contact with Israel. All its prophecy, too, pertains primarily to this people of Israel and to other nations only insofar as they come into contact with Israel. Is it important for us, then, to know who Israel is today? Well, prophecy, he says, prophecy pertains primarily to these people, the people of Israel. Understanding the biblical identity of America and Britain is the master key that unlocks the door to our being able to understand and grasp all of Bible prophecy. All of it. That's what Mr. Armstrong establishes there at the outset of his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Let's go back to Genesis, the first book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 12, and look at some critical history. Critical history. Genesis 12, verse 1, it says, now the Lord had said unto Abram, get you out of your country and from your kindred and from your father's house unto a land that I will show you. God told Abraham, look, you leave your homeland, your friends, relatives, all of your old ways of life, and you go to a place that I choose. And so he had to forsake the way of life that he was accustomed to in Babylon. He had to come out so to speak, of Satan's civilization and go after God's way of living, God's way of life. He had to flee from Babylon like the Israelites fled from Egypt. Verse 2, "And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing, and I'll bless them that bless you, and curse them that curse you. And in you," God says, "in you shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Now, the promises here are twofold. There's the one national promise, which is purely physical, the promise of race. And then there was the second individual promise that's purely spiritual, or the promise of grace. Mr. Armstrong said in his book, right here is where those who profess to be Christians and their teachers have fallen into error and scriptural blindness. They have failed to notice the twofold promise God made to Abraham. They recognize the messianic promise of spiritual salvation through the one seed Christ. It says this is a pivotal point. This is the point where professing Christians and their teachers jump the track of truth. This is the point where they switch off the track that would lead them to the missing master key to prophecies. They miss the fact that God gave Abraham promises of physical race as well as spiritual grace. You see, they recognize that messianic promise. They recognize the promise of spiritual grace. But they miss the fact that God gave Abraham promises of physical race as well. Let's look at 1 Chronicles chapter 5. 1 Chronicles 5. So we see this critical history starting with Abraham and then his son Isaac and Jacob. I mean, there was no branching out until Jacob's time. So for three generations. It was essentially a one-man nation. God made all these promises. You're going to be a great nation, a great multitude of nations. And there he was, just a small family, and not much more when Isaac and Rebekah came along. And then with Jacob, though, through him, the tribes were established, and the nation of Israel grew to be a large nation that eventually would spread over all the earth. 1 Chronicles 5, just to, again, back up to this point, about the twofold nature of those promises in Genesis 12. Here in 1 Chronicles 5, verse 1, it says, "Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright," or it says in the Revised Standard, "so that he," speaking of Reuben, "is not enrolled in the genealogy according to the birthright. For Judah," it says here in verse 2, "prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph's." Notice the distinction there, Judah and Joseph. The chief ruler came from Judah. That was the line that Jesus Christ would come from. But the birthright, it belonged to Joseph. Well, Reuben initially, but he gave it up. He lost it. Not unlike Esau. He lost it. And so it was bestowed upon Joseph and his descendants. In the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, it says, "So at this point, the two divisions of the Abrahamic promises, the birthright involving material and national promises, and the scepter, including the kingly and spiritual promises, were separated." You can see it clearly in 1 Chronicles 5. We just read it. "It is of first importance," Mr. Armstrong says, "to keep in mind that the birthright, including the promised land now called Palestine, the assurance of multitudinous population, material and national prosperity, dominance over other nations, was now given to Joseph and his sons." He says, mark that well. Mark it well. This birthright was not to be inherited by all the tribes of Israel. It was not given to the Jews. Only a part of the Israelites, the descendants of Joseph, was to inherit these tremendous national promises. It says, finally, these material promises for this life, then, belong to an altogether different tribe among the children of Israel than the scepter promise of the kingly line culminating in Jesus Christ. Which spiritual promise belonged to the tribes of Judah? And so you can go back to Genesis and look at Genesis 17 and Genesis 22 and others and see that Abraham, God promised him that his descendants would become, well, they would spread over the earth and turn into many nations. He promised Abraham, God did, that he would be the father of many nations, not just one. Now, you look at the Jewish history, the Jews have never been more than one nation. And yet God promised to Abraham, look, you're going to be the father of many nations. Joseph was to receive these birthright promises. Now, anciently in Bible history, Israel was split into two kingdoms, two nations, after Solomon died because of all of the burdensome taxes and so on, initiated by Rehoboam. And so most of Israel chose to follow Jeroboam instead. They broke away from the throne of David. They broke free from Jerusalem. It says in 1 Kings 12 and verse 20, there was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. Well, then verse 21 reveals that the tribe of Benjamin also went along with Judah. That's what Paul, or where Paul came from, as we read there in Romans 9. So basically you had Benjamin and Judah, and then some from the tribe of Levi that came and joined the nation of Judah later as well. But the majority of the Israelite tribes, including Joseph, keep in mind, including Joseph, they followed after Jeroboam, and they were the ones known as Israel, even in ancient history, even in Bible history. The Jews were known as the kingdom of Judah. And so in 1948, when they were trying to determine what to call the new Jewish state, it would have been more accurate if the state would have been named Judah. But it got the name Israel. And it's only added to the confusion since. But going back to the history there in the Old Testament, the history of these two nations, Israel and Judah, it was quite different after the two split apart. I mean, they both did end in disaster. They both went into captivity. They both did follow after so many of the same sins of Sabbath breaking, idolatry, and so on. And those sins continued right up until Israel was taken into Assyrian captivity, and they never did return to Palestine. Judah was taken into Babylonian captivity, and then some few of them did return and rebuild the temple. But those that were lost, the 10 tribes of Israel, the lost sheep, they lost their identity, but they didn't disappear. As I said earlier, you can just make a simple search through the archives of the New York Times and see just how much speculation there was during the 1800s. You just go back 150 years, and people were curious about where those lost tribes went. They wanted to know. You can find articles in the New York Times talking about that, exactly. Where those lost 10 tribes migrated after their Assyrian captivity. Why should people today be so ignorant of this history, of even the division of Israel into two nations there in the Old Testament? I mean, four books of the Bible are devoted to it. Where did those lost tribes go? Well, we'll have to save it for another time, some of the abundant scriptural evidence, and historical for that matter, about their journey, their trek, disappearing into Assyria, and then heading northwest of Palestine, primarily settling into the northwestern nations of Europe, the British Islands, and then eventually the United States of America. Mr. Armstrong identified our nations, the United States and Britain, as Manasseh and Ephraim, Ephraim being that great multitude of nations, that great empire, and Manasseh being that single great superpower. That's what Mr. Armstrong proved in the United States and Britain in prophecy. There was an article in 1969 in the New York Times about Mr. Armstrong and his work. This is from October 10th, 1969. It says, another important teaching of the movement, speaking of Mr. Armstrong's work, it calls it a movement there. Another important teaching of the movement is that the English and American peoples are the descendants of the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, the Times estimated at that point, 1969, it estimated that this teaching, Mr. Armstrong's teaching about the United States and Britain in prophecy, that it had more than 2 million adherents in America, just in the United States. There was, I mean, his work had an impact. There was a widespread awareness of the truth about ancient Israel's lost identity. The New York Times piece points that out. There was at least a fairly good awareness among certain circles. And a lot of that was because of Mr. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Did you know that that book was mailed to more than 6 million people worldwide? 6 million copies of The United States and Britain in Prophecy were distributed around this world, and we continue to send it out today. The exact same book that Mr. Armstrong wrote, nothing different about it. We reprinted it back in 1997, and we had to fight for 6 years in court to finally win the rights to continue doing so. We'll send you a free copy today if you like. Just email us at td@kpcg.fm, td@kpcg.fm. You can also go to thetrumpet.com right now, today, and start reading the book online. We'd like for you to have a free copy, though, that you can put on your shelves, that you can have at your desk, that you can have in your library, that you can go through yourself and teach to your family. It's a wonderful book, an exciting book, the most popular book Mr. Armstrong ever produced. Mystery of the Ages undoubtedly would have surpassed it. But that brings up some history that we don't have time to get into on today's program. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily radio show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Is prophecy real? Is it anything more than a collection of imaginations, vagaries, and wishful thinking? The answer is no. Human beings have never dreamed up an authentic prediction of the future. The human mind simply isn't capable of it. Such a feat would require godlike power. What about Bible prophecy? Is Bible prophecy real? Is it different than the litany of other failed prophecies that have been discarded throughout human history? Unlike other books, particularly those books that claim to predict the future, the Bible has endured for thousands of years. Something about this book has transcended thousands of generations of human history. And this book, the Holy Bible, claims to predict the future. It claims its prophecies come not from the minds of human beings, but from the mind of their Creator, from the mind of God. Prove the Bible's prophecies for yourself. If you cannot honestly prove them to be true, discard the Bible and move on with your life. But if you can, what a spectacular book the Bible becomes. request Herbert W. Armstrong's free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book will examine the core Bible prophecies and compare them to history and current events. More than 6 million people have requested this amazing and easy-to-read book. Order The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Herbert W. Armstrong and prove Bible prophecy for yourself. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Where do we find the United States and the British mentioned in the biblical prophecies? Yes, where? If you'll think this through, listen. We are the wealthiest of nations. We have been the most powerful. We and the British are the same family of peoples. Together, we possess more than two-thirds of all the wealth and the developed resources of this whole world, of this whole round earth on which we live. All other nations combined have little more than a fourth of the developed wealth and resources of this world, out of this earth, between them, to divide among them. Now, amazing though it is, we have acquired nearly all of our national wealth and greatness since the year of 1800 A.D. Never in history did anything like this occur. Never before in history did any nations that were little nations as we were in the year of 1800 suddenly sprout forth and grow and develop in wealth, in riches, in power, in military power, in financial power, and in political power and prestige among the nations of the world, such as the British and the American nations have done.
That again was Herbert Armstrong speaking on his radio program back in the 1950s or 60s. It's an old program, and you can see him talking about just the power, the size and scope of the British Empire and the American superpower, and all the wealth and the greatness that these two peoples accumulated since the year 1800 or so. Nothing like it ever occurred in history. And yet look at how far we've fallen, even since that broadcast, even in the last 50 or 60 years. It's because just as our astonishing rise in power was prophesied, well, so is this precipitous decline in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. Just as God has bestowed on us such material blessings as never before came to any nations, now to correct us so we may enjoy such blessings, he's going to bring upon our people such national disaster as has never before struck any nation. He said many prophecies describe this. We go through them here on this particular program. We talked recently about Russia and China rising to fill that power void left by the decline of the United States. This is an article from June 25th, just yesterday, in the Telegraph here in London, talking about cyber war and all that's happened recently in the United States. And then also, as we'll read here in just a second, in Britain, it says it's being described as the worst cyber hack of the U.S. government in history, a huge personnel database of government employees pilfered by foreign spies. But yesterday it emerged that the vast trove of details stolen is likely to have included information people supplied to get security clearances, such as intimate details of their sex lives, drug use, and finances. All of this, it is feared, is now in the hands of a foreign power, which could use it to blackmail and extort officials and ultimately get hold of classified information. What a dangerous development this is for the United States. It says, but it's not just America that's been hit. Uh-oh. Who else has been hit? It says, the first detected breach of British government systems came in 2003, when an email purportedly from a Tibetan group was opened in the Foreign Office. Hidden in a picture was a virus which allowed the hackers to get inside the network. In the following years, evidence that Britain was the target of a growing cyber espionage campaign increased. It also became clear that not just government, but also businesses were being targeted for their valuable secrets. And then later in the article, It gives this example of how this could work against great nations, nations that, well, were once great. It says, increasingly, cyber espionage is combined with human espionage to research targets and work out whom to approach and how. One Russian espionage attack is said to have involved researching a business executive, leading to the conclusion that he was gay but not out of the closet. The hackers then sent him an email from a gay rights organization, which they suspected he would open, since it looked as if it was sent personally to him. In fact, it contained malicious computer code and malware. They then counted on the fact that even if the executive did suspect it was malware, he would not be willing to go to his company's IT department or security team for fear it would reveal his sexuality. That's just one example. That's just one individual that was blackmailed. What of the 18 million or so that's just been stolen? All of that personal and private information stolen by the Chinese. Is this going to come back on the United States? This is only going to get much worse than it already is. It, as I said yesterday, it's Cyber Pearl Harbor. And nothing is being done about it. If anything, it's being concealed. The true extent of this problem, it's being covered up. Notice this story, shifting gears here for a second. This also from the Telegraph. The report about Asian grooming gangs was suppressed to avoid inflaming racial tension. This article from June 25th says a report detailing how gangs of Asian men, and by that they mean Pakistani Muslims, Asian men in Birmingham were grooming schoolgirls with alcohol and drugs was not made public after senior officers warned that such information could inflame racial tensions ahead of the 2010 general election. You just see this happening more and more in Britain, in the United States, where if it's something that kind of goes against political correctness, there's going to be an extensive plan to cover it up. It says West Midlands police were warned that more than 100 predominantly white school children, some as young as 13, were at serious risk of child exploitation with abusers approaching pupils at the school gates. It says police said they had identified 75 suspects, most boasting a history of sexual violence, and most of whom come from the Pakistani community in Birmingham. It says, but they warned that making the information public could inflame racial tensions, particularly ahead of the 2010 general election, which was due to take place several weeks later. It says, finally, the report, which was released under the Freedom of Information Act, but was redacted, identified one school where teachers had brought the problem to the police's attention. It said officers had identified almost 140 potential victims, some as young as 13, who were being plied with drugs and alcohol and then sexually abused and raped. But, well, we don't want to get that story out there because it might inflame racial tension. We want to cover up the truth. It's just these kinds of things just happen, it seems, almost daily. Outrageous! It's outrageous that there's not more of a willingness to just face some of these problems head on. But just like it says in Isaiah 1, verse 5, the whole head is sick and the heart is faint. There's just not a willingness to stand up to it and to call it what it is, to tell the truth, to confront the problem, to eliminate the problem. This last piece, you probably saw a fair bit in the news yesterday in the States, about the Supreme Court's decision to allow nationwide health care subsidies. According to the New York Times, the Supreme Court ruled Thursday that President Obama's health care law allows the federal government to provide nationwide tax subsidies to help poor and middle-class people buy health insurance, a sweeping vindication that endorsed the larger purpose of Mr. Obama's signature legislative achievement. It was a 6-3 ruling. The three judges that joined together for the dissent, led by Anthony Scalia. He just made some some interesting comments in his dissent that I think are worth repeating here. Firstly, he said we should start calling this law SCOTUS care instead of Obamacare. It's the Supreme Court of the United States, really, that's implemented this. It's given the president everything that he's wanted. But notice what Scalia says later on in his dissent. He says, words no longer have meaning if an exchange that is not established by a state is established by the state. That was the controversial statement that came up in this battle. What does it mean to be established by the state? He said, today's interpretation is not merely unnatural, it's unheard of. This court's two decisions on the act, speaking of the Affordable Care Act, will surely be remembered through the years. The somersaults of statutory interpretation they have performed, penalty means tax, further Medicaid payments to the state means only incremental Medicaid payments to the state, established by the state means not established by the state, will be cited by litigants endlessly to the confusion of honest jurisprudence. He says, finally, and the cases will publish forever the discouraging truth that the Supreme Court of the United States favors some laws over others and is prepared to do whatever it takes to uphold and assist its favorites. See, words no longer have meaning. Even those that are there to uphold the words, the truth, the law, all too often, you see, as he pointed out in his dissent, you see individuals that are only there to uphold and assist not the law of the land, but rather their favorites, Well, that's all we have time for here today. I just want to remind you, though, that on Friday, of course, the Trumpet Hour plays at, speaking of upholding truth, you can tune in later today to the Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker as your host and all of the columnists there for thetrumpet.com and their discussion on the news items that made it into the Trumpet Weekly this week. The Trumpet Weekly, by the way, we just recently passed 30,000 subscriptions to that email publication, 30,810 to be precise. So if you aren't a subscriber to that weekly email publication, it's emailed to you each Friday afternoon. Go to thetrumpet.com and sign up for your free subscription today. And then, as I say, make sure you also listen in to the Trumpet Hour. It comes on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Oklahoma time. And if you don't live in Oklahoma or live in another time zone, you can just go to kpcg.fm and find the station schedule there on that website and then just make the adjustment based upon the time difference from wherever you happen to be listening to this station. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, as I said. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your feedback. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. And hopefully next week we can read a few of your comments on the program. Thanks for listening today. And we'll see you next week.